Hello, I'm Father Charles Connor. Welcome to our series on the saint for the third millennium, Thérèse of Lisieux, as we continue our meditation on Thérèse and suffering. Please stay with us.
Welcome to Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Thérèse of Lisieux. In this series, Father Charles Connor presents the life, spiritual direction, and relevance of Saint Thérèse of Lisieux for today's Catholic and for the Church in all generations. Here now is Father Charles Connor.
We have been considering the psychological and spiritual sufferings of the life of Thérèse of Lisieux and what she has to teach us in the area of both psychological and spiritual suffering. We concluded our last program by noting that the last spiritual suffering of her life was the intense torment that after her death, there was no heaven. She was living with that intense spiritual torment for the last year and a half, and coupled with it was the physical suffering that would bring about her death on September 30th, 1897. She lived, therefore, with the two. And we want to look more closely in this program at the physical suffering that the good Lord permitted her to go through. The very real joy in the cross of suffering, as she saw it, that would ultimately bring her earthly life to an end. We had mentioned before that on Good Friday, 1896, she experienced the first episode, really, of the tuberculosis that would claim her life with the coughing up of blood. From May until September of 1897, roughly a year after that Good Friday experience, Thérèse suffered acutely at every level. Much of what she said from her sickbed in the infirmary in the Lisieux Carmel was recorded in what has become known very famously as the Yellow Notebook. The Yellow Notebook was nothing more than Mother Agnes taking down the recollections of her younger sister, questioning her about points in her beautiful autobiography, The Story of the Soul, and adding certain points to that somewhat unfinished manuscript. The complete Story of the Soul was not totally finished just directly from the hand, from the pen of Thérèse at the moment of her death. Some things were added on her recommendation, as she told her sister, Mother Agnes, from her sickbed in the infirmary at Carmel. But the Yellow Notebook is a very, very famous part of her life, and it consists primarily of her thoughts. And those thoughts came from the intensity of the physical suffering of the last period of her life, and most particularly of the last 2 months of her life. That would be from late July until the 30th of September, 1897. We know them today as her last conversations, and they are, of course, substantially accurate. So here we have a young woman of 24 years of age, on the spiritual level remaining in the darkness of faith, and on the physical level suffering from a tuberculosis which would eat away at her lungs and at her intestines. She became so emaciated that some of the bones actually began to protrude from her skin. Fever, dreaded pain, difficulty in breathing, all of these things were constant the last few months of her life. Abbe Combe, one of the great Thérèsian scholars whom we have referred to on previous occasions, saw an evolution in Thérèse's thoughts on suffering. She went from suffering as a joy, which we've mentioned before, and from suffering as a joy, she went to suffering in union with Christ. And from suffering in union with Christ, she went to suffering for love alone, for the satisfaction of God's will alone. So suffering is a joy. From that she evolved to suffering as a union with Christ. And from that she evolved to suffering as a fulfillment of God's will, suffering for love alone. The three steps in the suffering of Thérèse, at least as they were recorded in the book of her spirituality given us by Abbé André Tomes. And so much of these aspects are rather beautifully expressed by Thérèse herself in a letter she wrote to Céline. She writes, "He is offering us a chalice as bitter as our feeble nature can bear. Let us not withdraw our lips from this chalice prepared from the hand of Jesus. Let us not withdraw our lips from this chalice prepared from the hand of Jesus. Let us rather see life as it really is. It is a moment between two eternities." In other words, eternity was always there. We came into time and live our earthly life at a given moment in space and time, and then we become part of eternity. And what is life? She's saying to Céline, it is simply this brief period of time between two eternities. Let us suffer in peace. I admit, she says, that this word peace seemed a little strong to me. But the other day, when reflecting on it, I found the secret of suffering in peace. To suffer in peace, it is enough to will all that Jesus wills. To suffer in peace, it is enough to will all that Jesus wills. To be the spouse of Jesus, we must resemble Jesus. And Jesus is all bloody. He is crowned with thorns. There is a very famous painting of Thérèse, which is often shown of her in her Carmelite habit. And she is holding two rather large prayer cards, one in each hand. One prayer card is the infant Jesus. The other prayer card is a very explicit image of the face of Christ. She started out as Thérèse of the Child Jesus, and then she extended her formal religious title so that she was Thérèse of the Child Jesus and of the Holy Face. And we can see her intense devotion, particularly to the passion and to the physical sufferings of Christ, that made her want to add this particular religious title to her religious name. And we see it depicted, as we say very beautifully, in this photograph of her. Thérèse of the Child Jesus, yes, but also Thérèse of the Holy Face. Thérèse who saw those physical sufferings of Christ and always united her own physical sufferings with Christ's physical sufferings. This poem that she wrote expresses, even better fashion really, this concept that we're talking of, even in better fashion than the letter to Céline. This is what she wrote in the poem. "My joy is to love suffering. I smile while shedding tears. I accept with gratitude the thorns mingled with flowers. If sometimes I shed tears, my joy is to hide them well. Oh, how many charms there are in suffering when one knows how to hide it with flowers. I want only to suffer without saying so, so that Jesus may be consoled. My joy is to see him smile. My joy is to struggle unceasingly, to bring forth spiritual children, to bring forth spiritual children. It's with a heart burning with tenderness that I keep saying to Jesus, I'm happy to suffer. My only joy on earth is to be able to please you." I suspect most of us, if we were very candid, very realistic, very honest, most of us would admit that we would have a considerable distance to go before we could write poetry such as that, even if we were poetically inclined. We may not be poetically inclined, but even if we were. Or could we even sit down and write prose that would express the same thoughts about our own life, about our own feelings, about our own desires? Most of us would have a great way to go. This is not something Pollyannish. This is what this young saint really felt. And because this young saint is a doctor of the church, the expression of her feeling in a poem such as this, given to the world, given to you and I to read, means that not only had she reached this level, but you and I can reach it as well. We could express not necessarily the very same sentiment she expresses, but we can move in the direction of those sentiments because we all have suffering. And how foreign is physical suffering to any of us? It's not very foreign. It is a very, very common part of life. We absolutely can move in the direction expressed in this poetry, and she is telling us, if I can do it, so can you. Follow my little way. On the 8th of July in 1897, she left her cell in the convent for the last time. She was brought downstairs to the infirmary, and she would never leave that infirmary for the rest of her earthly life. She lived in a very small room. She was placed in an iron bed. The iron bed was surrounded by brown curtains, and on the brown curtains she had penned the pictures of her famous saints, people to whom she had devotion. One was the great missionary, Theophane Vaynard, to whom she often prayed. Pictures of Our Lord and the Blessed Mother and so forth. Those particular images which evoked the strongest spiritual responses from her young soul. They were all penned now to these brown curtains which surrounded her bed. She was not able to see out except by leaning over in the bed, and with some effort she could see out the window to the cloister garden. On her left-hand side was an adjoining room in which Sister Genevieve, who was the infirmarian, that would be her sister Celine, would sleep at night and would be close to her when she needed help in her physical illness. And just a little beyond the room in which Celine was staying, a little further along, there was another door which opened onto the cloister. And between these two doors, against the wall, was placed the statue of the Virgin of the Smile, clearly in view of Thérèse. She could look right at it. That same statue of Our Lady, which had smiled on the young girl in 1883, and it now brought her immense joy to know that Our Blessed Mother was looking right at her, and she could pray to her and remain very, very close to her. The sisters would come to visit her on occasion, but only on occasion. They did not want to bother her in the intensity of her physical suffering. Now, the period of July 27th, July 28th, those 2 days at the end of July 1897 were the beginning of what must be called her great suffering. Until then, Thérèse said that she had only physical inconveniences to put up with. Now she enters into the final period of her life, the great suffering. On Friday evening, the 30th of July, her health reached a crisis point. She was suffocating, and they gave her ether to help her to breathe. But it brought her very, very little relief. At 6 o'clock, a priest was called in to give her the last rites of the church. And in the next room, adjacent to the infirmary, items were being prepared for her imminent burial. Isn't it curious? It was July 30th, and she would not die until September 30th. So she rallied from this crisis on this particular evening. She made a very truly heroic effort shortly thereafter to write to Father Maurice Belliere to inform him that this was the illness which was going to claim her life, and it would be the last time she would be writing to him. And then she wrote another letter to Father Adolphe Rouland. She wrote two letters to her family. And she wrote several notes to her sisters in the Carmel. All of these were written in a very decidedly shaky hand. You can see them as you look at the original documents. And such an effort certainly had to have taken a great deal of time and a great deal of courage. She was able to read a little bit in the early days of August. She read from The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis, which was constantly with her. The scriptures, of course, never left her, the Gospels in particular, and some of the writings of John of the Cross. There is a wonderful book, by the way, which has been written by Bishop Guy Gaucher, who we mentioned before, the great French Carmelite, on the influence of John of the Cross on the thinking of Thérèse. And we highly recommend to you Bishop Gaucher's book, John of the Cross and Thérèse. As we mentioned earlier, one-third of the material contained in the yellow notebook of Mother Agnes were reflections from Thérèse during these final 7 to 8 weeks of her life. Certain corrections were made to her memoirs, to her famous Story of the Soul, and so forth. And finally, we know that she shared many, many confidences with Mother Agnes, who wrote them all down in great detail. She had been anointed, and as she came close to death, she surprised her surgeon somewhat because he was of the impression that most patients that close to death would become very, very panic-stricken. She did not become panic-stricken at all. In fact, she continued to joke. She was a great mimic, you know, in her early days. She could mimic anyone, mimic the sisters, mimic her family members, mimic world leaders. And she continued the humor. Sister Marie of the Eucharist, Isidore Guérin's daughter, wrote to her father and said she's going to die laughing because she never lost her sense of humor in all these final weeks of her life. Well, July gave way to August. On the evening of the Feast of the Assumption, August 15th, she had great difficulty in breathing. She suffered greatly from sharp pain in her left side. She had swelling in her legs, and this certainly marked a new stage in her illness. August 16th, the pains in the left lung were so severe that her sister, Sister Genevieve, was very alarmed, lit a blessed candle, and thought that death might even come to her on that particular evening, but it did not. The next day, August 17th, everyone realized that she could not remain in the state she was in without seeing a doctor, and so her cousin, Dr. Francis Le Naël, who had just returned from Cayenne and who was married to Jean Guérin, came in and examined her, and he gave the following diagnosis. It is the only written statement that we have of any doctor about Thérèse's medical condition. This was on the 26th, actually, of August that he wrote the description. The right lung is completely lost, filled with tubercles in the process of softening. The lower part of the left lung is affected. She is very emaciated, but her face still does her honor. She is suffering very much from intercostal neuralgia. After this diagnosis had been written, Sister Marie of the Eucharist wrote to her father. She writes, Francis told us recently that the tuberculosis has reached its final stage. She received Holy Communion for the final time on the 19th of August, and she offered the last Holy Communion of her life for a Carmelite priest, Father Hyacinthe Loison. Loison had been ordained a diocesan priest, became a Carmelite, received a particular woman into the church, later took off and married the woman, and began his own French National Catholic Church. A real heartbreak. And Thérèse offered her last Holy Communion for this priest. She was back and forth and back and forth in the course of her illness through August and through September. And we come finally to the morning of September 30th, the day on which she would die. That morning, her sister Marie, who was Sister Marie of the Sacred Heart, went to get Mother Agnes, who was sleeping nearby in the cell off the cloister. During the community mass, three of the sisters stayed with Thérèse. She was grasping for breath that morning, and the only thing she was able to say was a brief comment, a about the Virgin of the Smile. She said, I prayed fervently to her. It is sheer agony I'm going through, with absolutely no consolation. At about 2:30 that afternoon, she rallied to some extent, and to everyone's surprise, she sat up in the bed. She had not been able to sit up in bed for several weeks, but that afternoon she did, for the last time. According to an account given by Sister Marie of the Trinity, who was probably, we don't want to call her the most famous or the most favorite novice that Therese had as mistress of novices, but certainly the novice who profited the most from their relationship. Therese was the mistress of novices for a few years, and Marie of the Trinity wrote a great deal about the influence of Saint Therese on her, on Marie of the Trinity, when she was a novice. Well, she left an account of this final afternoon of Therese's life. Therese cried out in a voice rendered loud and clear by the acuteness of her pain, My God, have mercy on me. Mary, help me. My God, how I am suffering. The chalice is full, right up to the brim. I'll never be able to die. That was about 2:30 in the afternoon. By 3 o'clock, she was still sitting up in bed, and she extended her arms in this fashion, very much in the form of a cross, just to try to get some physical relief from the intensity of her suffering. The community had been with her. They left for a while, and Mother Agnes remained with her alone. And Mother Agnes has left us the following account. I was alone by her side. It was about 4:30. Her face changed all of a sudden, and I understood it was her last agony. Mother Prioress returned, and the whole community was soon assembled. She smiled, but did not speak again until just before she died. For more than 2 hours, a terrible rattle tore her chest. Her face was flushed, her hands purplish. She was trembling in all her members, and her feet were as cold as ice. Large beads of perspiration stood out in drops on her forehead and ran down her cheeks. She was having more and more difficulty in breathing, and in order to breathe, she sometimes uttered little involuntary cries. By 6 o'clock in the evening, the Angelus bell rang. She looked for a long time at the Virgin of the Smile. She was holding a crucifix very, very firmly in her hands. A few minutes after 7, the prioress let the community leave once again, and Mother Agnes now describes what happens. Her breathing suddenly became weaker and more labored. She fell back in the pillow, her head turned toward the right. The infirmary bell was rung, and to allow the nuns to assemble quickly, Mother Marie de Gonzague said in a loud voice, Open all the doors. Hardly had the nuns knelt at her bedside when she pronounced very distinctly her final act of love. Oh, I love him, she said, looking at her crucifix. Then a moment later, my God, I love you. They were her last words. We thought that was the end, when suddenly she raised her eyes that were full of life and shining with an indescribable happiness surpassing all her hopes. Sister Marie of the Eucharist approached with a candle to get a better look at that sublime gaze which lasted for the space of a credo. The light from the candle passed back and forth in front of her eyes, and it did not cause any movement in her eyelids. It was 7:20. She was buried in the town cemetery on Monday, October 4th, 1897, on a hill overlooking Lisieux. From the book, The Passion of Therese of Lisieux by Guy Gaucher. Only those who have experienced the unrelenting pain of physical suffering can understand the slow undermining of a 24-year-old body. One must suffer in order to know, she wrote. When Therese first became ill, she was not unacquainted with suffering. but she was more familiar with moral suffering. The great trial of her life belonged to the past. The cerebral paralysis of her beloved father that had touched the innermost recesses of her being. Nothing could ever quite equal that abyss of sorrow into which she had been plunged at the age of 15. It lasted from the time of her postulancy until 1892. A person who comes through such a trial victorious, writes Bishop Gaucher, has indeed matured. So she had indeed matured to withstand the physical suffering of the end, and she certainly teaches all of us that whatever our problems, our difficulties, our trials, or our sufferings, taken alone, they are an absolute waste. Totally meaningless. Taken with Him, they have the potential to bring us joy or peace or the uniting of our will with His. Let us profit from one moment of suffering. Let us see only one moment. A moment is a treasure. One act of love will make us know Jesus better. It will bring us closer to Him during the whole of eternity.
Join us next week at this time for Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Therese of Lisieux, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Sins committed against your Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Amen.